O'Reilly Auto Parts puede ayudarte a revisar tu luz check engine, luz ABS o luz de mantenimiento con O'Reilly Veriscan. El servicio es gratis y recibirás un informe con soluciones verificadas por técnicos maestros certificados ASE. Si necesitas ayuda, O'Reilly Auto Parts te puede recomendar un taller. Pregunta por O'Reilly Veriscan hoy mismo. O'Reilly Auto Parts.
SBS, a world of difference. You're with NITV Radio, on mobile, online and on radio.
We acknowledge the traditional owners of the land NITV Radio broadcasts from, the Cammeraygal people and their elders past and present. We also acknowledge all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander tribes and clans we broadcast to, from the mountains to the plains, from the desert to the sea. From fresh water to salt water. Yura Damarang, hello, I'm your host Luana Grant and welcome to NITV Radio for this Wednesday, the 3rd of December. Coming up on today's show, we catch up with Melanie Harris, Head of Indigenous Engagement and Export at the Australian Trade and Investment Commission. In the spirit of reconciliation, AusTrade supports First Nations businesses to develop and succeed in the areas of tourism, global trade and investment. And we take a look at the latest bushfire forecasts as there is an increased fire risk across parts of Australia this summer. But coming up first is the latest news for this Wednesday, the 3rd of December. You're listening to NITV Radio.
Australia Day 1972 saw the first Aboriginal embassy erected outside Parliament.
The native title legislation must be amended.
And they've walked this land so many times before anybody came.
I am sorry.
In this bulletin, the death toll from deadly storms in Asia surpasses 1,300. Volunteer firefighters in WA say conditions are expected to ease. And in football, Sam Kerr has helped lift the Matildas to a win over New Zealand. Victoria's outgoing Commissioner for Aboriginal Children and Young People, Meena Singh, says the state's proposed youth crime laws failed to address the causes of the problem. The contentious Adult Time for Violent Crime laws introduced to Parliament on Tuesday will see children aged 14 and over charged with violent offences dealt with in the county court. Ms Singh has told NITV a punitive approach towards children damages their chances of rehabilitation.
I mean, we see so many children and young people who are in youth justice systems who have had experiences as victims of family violence. So they're seeing violence used against them in a really personal way in what's supposed to be the safety of their home. And so if we're not addressing what it means to be a victim, if we're not addressing what it means to experience violence, then we're leaving too many children and young people to see violence as a viable option.
Jointly managed parks in Western Australia are creating more opportunities for Indigenous rangers to work on country. In the Gascoyne region in the state's mid-north, parks are expanding and new ones being developed, with cultural knowledge steering land care and conservation. The agreement with the WA Governor gives Yingidar people a stronger voice in how their land is managed. Yingidar Assistant Ranger Leslie Snowball told NITV the work gives her meaning.
Working on a place where my ancestors would be and still are is incredible. I feel connected spiritually and physically as well because I just get to walk on this land where they could have travelled also.
Volunteer firefighters say conditions are expected to ease in the coming days for at least one of the two bushfires in Western Australia. WA has been hit by two emergency level bushfires, one in West River and one in Wagon. A farmer from West River was killed while fighting the blaze. Brent Allen, who led the two-day fire rescue operation in Geraldton, says conditions have improved significantly.
We had
conditions overnight are quite benign, so it's meant that our crews working overnight have really managed to tie up the loose ends. So we're quite confident now that, barring a drastic change to weather forecasts, that we can really get this tied up. And look, there's still plenty of work to do. We've got probably 2 days left of blacking out, mopping up, making the entire area safe.
Governments and aid groups in Indonesia and Sri Lanka are rushing to get aid to hundreds of thousands stranded by deadly flooding. The death toll from deadly storms in four countries in Asia, Sri Lanka, Indonesia, Malaysia and Thailand, has surpassed 1,300. In central Sri Lanka, Shifthi Farida, a 58-year-old widow, says she and her family left their house in the middle of the night and ran for their lives when a landslide struck, triggered by a deadly cyclone.
I live in my son's house. When the neighbouring house got washed away, we all ran for our lives. We somehow escaped and saved our lives. We have no house to go back to. We lost a lot of our people.
Across the country, officials say 336 people remain missing and 1.2 million have been affected. Hundreds of army and police personnel have been deployed to regions hit by landslides to retrieve bodies. Russian President Vladimir Putin is holding a closed-door meeting with Donald Trump's son-in-law, Jared Kushner, and U.S. Special Envoy Steve Witkoff in the Kremlin. The meeting is a crucial moment for Ukraine following days of frantic diplomacy kicked off by a unilateral U.S. plan to bring peace, which has since been revised under pressure from Ukraine and its European backers. Before the meeting with Mr. Kushner and Mr. Witkoff, Mr. Putin accused Europe of sabotaging the peace deal with their amendments. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky says any plan must actually end the war for good, not just lead to a pause in the fighting that began with Mr. Putin's offensive in February 2022. US President Donald Trump says he is feeling good about the prospects of a peace deal to end Europe's bloodiest conflict since World War II.
We're trying to get that settled. I've settled 8 wars. This would be the 9th. And our people are over in Russia right now to see if we can get it settled. Not an easy situation. Let me tell you what a mess. It's a war that never would have happened if I were president.
Pope Leo XIV has called for dialogue between the United States and Venezuela amid growing fears of American military action. The US-born Pope says there are mixed signals coming from the United States in the dispute, noting a phone call between President Donald Trump and Venezuela's Nicolas Maduro and speculation of sending US troops. He says through diplomacy, the Vatican is seeking to defuse tensions.
Regarding Venezuela, together with the local bishops' conference and with the Vatican ambassador, we are searching for ways to calm down the situation, mostly for the good of the people. Because very often it is the people and not the authorities who suffer in these situations. It is better to find ways to have dialogue and perhaps use economic pressure and find other ways to change the situation.
Pop star Sabrina Carpenter has criticised the Trump administration for using her hit 2024 song Juno as the soundtrack for a TikTok video showing immigration and customs enforcement agents detaining people during raids. The video was shared by the White House on Monday. In a message on social media platform X, Carpenter called the video evil and disgusting and says she does not want her music used to benefit what she called an inhumane agenda. The Grammy Award-winning singer joins the list of more than 24 musicians, including Neil Young and the Rolling Stones, who have objected to President Donald Trump's use of their music. In a statement, White House spokeswoman Abigail Jackson says there would be no apology. Australia's economic growth is set to accelerate to its fastest speed in more than 2 years on the back of a rebound in government spending. Economists expect data released by the Australian Bureau of Statistics later today will show annual growth in the nation's gross domestic product accelerated from 1.8% to as much as 2.3% in the September quarter. That would be the strongest growth since March 2023. The Commonwealth Bank's economics team says the acceleration is driven by a rise in public investment, which increased by 3% in the September quarter. And in football, Sam Kerr has helped lift the Matildas to a 2-point triumph over New Zealand in their last match before the Asia Cup. Goals from Alana Kennedy and Hayley Russo came in Kerr's first game on home soil in 2 years in Tuesday night's friendly in Adelaide. Kennedy told Network 10 the team has already adopted an Asian Cup mindset.
So I think it's just trying to do what I can when I get the opportunity. And for us, we looked at this game as the second game in the group stages and at the Asian Cup, and the mentality going into that game has to be a strong one. So, for me, it was focusing on what the team needed.
Kerr delivered an emphatic 45-minute reminder of her talents and importance to Australia's Asian Cup chances next March. Kerr missed last Friday's 5-0 blitz of the Kiwis in Gosford with a calf complaint and last played for the Matildas in October 2023 against England. And now for a look at today's weather. Perth, sunny 25. Adelaide, mostly sunny 30. Melbourne, sunny 29. Hobart, partly cloudy 24. Canberra, sunny 29. Wollongong, sunny and 25. Sydney, sunny 26. Newcastle, also sunny and 26. Brisbane, partly cloudy 28. Cairns, showers and a possible late storm 31. And Darwin, mostly sunny 35. And that is NITV Radio News.
Your community, your conversation. NITV Radio. Join the conversation on radio, online, and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio and I'm your host, Luana Grant. Still to come on the show, we catch up with Melanie Harris, Head of Indigenous Engagement and Export at the Australian Trade and Investment Commission. But first, here's the latest from our NITV news team. Controversial new laws for children who commit violent crimes to be sentenced as adults will be introduced into Victoria's Parliament this week. The Premier, Jacinta Allan, says she's committed to passing her Adult Time for Violent Crime Bill before Parliament winds up for the year. Under the changes, children as young as 14 will face adult sentences for violent crimes, similar to youth crime laws already in place in Queensland. Children charged with offences including home invasion, intentionally causing harm and carjacking will be automatically tried in an adult court.
Children will be treated as an adult in the court system, where we know jail is more likely and sentences will be longer. And this has come from listening to victims of crime, understanding that they've said clearly there's not enough consequences, which is why the work has been done to bring adult time for violent crime to the Victorian Parliament this week.
Meanwhile, Victoria's Chief Advocate for Indigenous Children argues the laws essentially say child offenders are beyond hope of rehabilitation. The state's Commissioner for Aboriginal Young People and Children, Meena Singh, will step down from the job later this month. Yesterday, she sat down with our Victoria correspondent, Cameron Gooley.
Meena Singh, thanks for joining us on NITV. Why have you made this decision to step down from this role?
It's a big decision. I started the role in April 2022, and this year has been incredibly tough. For 8 months of the year, I've also been acting as Principal Commissioner, as well as doing my Commissioner for Aboriginal Children and Young People role. And I guess, in short, I need a rest. It's taken its toll, and I am looking forward to a bit of a break and then thinking about what's next. But I'll always be an advocate for Aboriginal children and young people, for Aboriginal community.
Reflecting on your time as Commissioner, what are some of the highlights in working with Young Mob in Victoria?
The highlights have always just been being to engage directly with Aboriginal children and young people, hearing their stories firsthand, seeing their visions for their future, what they want to do with their lives, but also seeing how resilient they are and how resilient they shouldn't have to be.
The Victorian government's introducing its new tough youth crime legislation to Parliament today. What are your concerns with that legislation?
What concerns me the most is
how dismissive it is of children and young people's capacity for rehabilitation, we're effectively saying these children are beyond hope. And if we're saying that, we're saying our systems aren't working. What legislation like this does is purely look at the behaviours, and it actually doesn't address why children and young people are getting involved in crime, why they're using violence as part of their crime. I mean, we see so many children and young people who are in youth justice systems who have had experiences of as victims of family violence. So they're seeing violence used against them in a really personal way in the in what's supposed to be the safety of their home. Unfortunately, I see it as incredibly short-sighted, this legislation.
Given we have an election next year, are you concerned that the legislation may be politically motivated?
All I know is that I'm not seeing a lot of evidence behind this legislation. I know the Premier has talked about listening to victims of crime. A lot of the children that are offending are also victims of crime, have been victims of crime before they've gotten involved in criminal activity.
What advice do you have for your successor?
Truly, our kids have the answers. The greatest joy that comes from the role will be getting to constantly engage with Aboriginal children and young people.
Meena Singh, thank you for your time.
There'll be no future development on WA's Woodjumup Rottnest Island without the former penal colony's Aboriginal history being considered. The Woodjuck Aboriginal Corporation has won a contract to oversee future heritage approvals on the island. Between 1838 and 1902, as many as 10,000 Aboriginal men were imprisoned there, and close to 400 are buried on the island. Now, before any new building or infrastructure projects are given the go-ahead, First Nations cultural history will be taken into account.
We'll be able to look after the heritage side of things here on Rottnest Island. Yeah.
The number of men and boys that are buried beneath the sands of Woodjumup. We now remember them, and that will be acknowledged them through the creation of a memorialisation of the burial ground.
As a teenager, Mervyn Bishop made history as Australia's first Aboriginal press photographer. After spending a lifetime capturing defining moments in Australia's history, he's donated more than 200,000 images to the New South Wales State Library. The powerful body of work is now a major exhibition, showcasing not just his public career, but also intimate portraits of family life.
When you look at the clarity of that image, I shot it on a Hasselblad.
Uncle Mervyn Bishop has taken some of Australia's most iconic photographs. He captured this stirring image of former Australian Prime Minister Gough Whitlam and Gurindji leader Vincent Lingiari.
The nice blue sky. That's what I wanted.
His award-winning photographs are on display at his most personal exhibition to date, Mervyn Bishop Up Close, which includes intimate family photos.
There's pictures of my family, her favourite pictures, my sister, her children, and my son and daughter. One of them was a picture I've taken of my cousins at a property in Brewarrina called Gundawira, and I like that picture because it's youthful and they're happy, they're rowing a boat, and I regard that as one of my favourites.
Uncle Mervyn says his passion for photography was sparked by his late mother, an amateur photographer, Marjorie Bishop.
And she always loved taking photographs on a Kodak 620 camera box, and I sort of had a bit of an interest, sometimes borrow it and to take some pictures.
Some of his favourite memories growing up were gathering in the backyard with his family for a slide night.
Put a white sheet up on the clothesline and had the projector and had these nice images. Half the street would come along, the kids would be there, and it was a good night. That's when I used the Sydney Morning Herald.
In 1963, at 17 years old, Uncle Merv accepted a cadetship with the Sydney Morning Herald, making history as Australia's first Aboriginal press photographer.
During that time, you learned all about, in those days, press work, or going from developing photographs, printing, all bits and pieces. Oh, wow, look at all this.
The exhibition offers a rare glimpse into the life of one of Australia's most influential photographers.
It's Rosemary there, doing baton twirling. Your mother.
Whose powerful images have helped shape a nation. Michael Rennie, NITV News.
NITV Radio, Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 1 p.m. or anytime online. Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. The latest bushfire outlook forecasts an increased fire risk across parts of Australia this summer. Despite recent rainfall in the country's southeast, authorities say it won't take long for a blaze to take hold. As summer gets underway, Australians are being urged to not put their safety on the back burner. Minister for Regional Development, Christy McBain, says this bushfire season could test the preparedness of many.
We want to make sure that individuals are prepared in this upcoming high-risk weather season. It is incredibly important now to move towards those bushfire-ready plans, to understand where evacuation centres will be located, and to make sure that we are caring for vulnerable cohorts in your local community.
Emergency Management Commissioner for Victoria, Tim Wybush, is warning parts of the country could rapidly come under fire threat.
We are likely to see over the summer months warmer temperatures than normal, both daytime and nighttime. And what that means is, even though we've seen really good spring rainfall, we will see our conditions dry out again, and that will see further fuels in our environment, both grass and in our forested areas.
In the latest seasonal bushfire outlook, the Australian and New Zealand Council for Fire and Emergency Services has identified an increased risk of fires across parts of Western Australia, New South Wales and Victoria. CEO Rob Webb says they didn't see as much rainfall as they'd hoped for across Australia's eastern states.
We were hopeful that we'd get a fair bit of rain through spring, but we probably didn't get that across a wide area of eastern Australia. So we have seen fires start to run a little bit through New South Wales, and of course Queensland and Northern Territory had fires as well through the earlier parts of the year. But it doesn't take long once these hot temperatures get into the landscape for the vegetation to dry out. And of course the areas are focused on aren't the only places that should be preparing for fire. Even in a normal year, there are many parts of southern Australia that can experience a bushfire.
Chief Fire Officer for Forest Fire Management Victoria, Chris Hardman, says prolonged dry conditions in the state are causing particular concern.
We've had some really significant long-term drying, particularly of the forested areas. And many people in regional and rural Victoria know that that rainfall shortage is causing real problems.
Mr. Webb says the drying has turned much of Australia's bushland into prime fire fuel.
One of the things that precursor to particularly bad fire conditions are when you do have that really deep drying. So not only do your grass fuels dry out, but your trees start to come under stress as well. It can lead, once the heat gets in of summer, can lead to rapid drying and fires can spread through much more easily.
As Australians enter the summer months, the Council for Fire and Emergency Services is also warning people living outside high-risk areas to stay alert for bushfires and visit your local fire authority's website to complete a bushfire survival plan if you haven't already. And that story was produced by Asha Abdi and Sam Dover for SBS News.
Conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio. Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
Welcome back. You're listening to NITV Radio. First Nations businesses from around the nation can be supported in their export endeavours with assistance from the federal government agency AusTrade, also known as the Australian Trade and Investment Commission. In the spirit of reconciliation, AusTrade supports First Nations businesses to develop and succeed in the areas of tourism, global trade and investment. NITV Radio's Kerry Lee Barry took some time out to catch up with Melanie Harris, Head of Indigenous Engagement and Export at the Australian Trade and Investment Commission, to find out more.
Hi, I'm Melanie Harris, Head of Indigenous Engagement and Export at Austrade. I'm from beautiful Yuin country on the south coast of New South Wales.
And tell us about your job, Melanie. It sounds really exciting, talking about engagement and export with MOB. What is it that you do for Community MOB?
So I help Indigenous businesses on their export journey. So that could be anything from advice to market selection to actually being overseas with them in the market.
And there must be so many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander businesses across the nation who do export to different parts of the world. Are you able to share with us some of those businesses and what they export?
Yeah, we've got about 400 in our records, and it's not an exact science at the moment, but we're working on that. But it's a good starting point. And those businesses are across what we call our sort of priority sectors, which is agri-food and consumer, critical enabling technology, defence capability, education and skills, and the green economy. So it's quite a broad range of sectors, which is really exciting to see.
Does that include Aboriginal art within those groups?
We actually don't work directly with what we call creative industries, but we support them through other mechanisms through, on their journey, whether it be promotional activities or supporting those peak bodies that support the creative industries. But I still meet with lots of artists and give them advice. And we also have online tools that the creative industries can refer to at any time. And so could all Indigenous businesses, but for a bit more of that tailored servicing, we don't have, because we don't have the speciality overseas in markets, specifically in that sector.
Why do you think it's important for Indigenous businesses to head overseas and go global, if you like?
God, there's many reasons, but a couple that come to mind is that it's, Australia's, got a finite population and, the world's a very big place. And so there's lots of opportunities out there. You just look at Southeast Asia, there's millions of people just on our doorstep that already have a really good relationship with Australia. I think Australian products and services are highly regarded overseas. They're already premium products in a lot of countries and premium services and our specialities. And so you're already going to a lot of places where, the buyer or the audience or your consumers, value Australia. And so, and then bringing that Indigenous culture and Indigenous business ethos actually just is an added bonus.
And can you share with us some of what other, popular trade at export items, if you like, from some of our Indigenous businesses? What are people after around the world from our MOB?
Oh, look, a lot of it comes down to like novel foods and that sort of interesting. Everybody's looking for something a little bit different to, put them ahead. When you think about hotels and restaurants, they want something that's a bit new and different. And Indigenous businesses definitely have that in spades, but, then they're up against market access issues in different countries, so you've got to work through that. But then we have businesses that work in cybersecurity and med tech, and they've got that sort of trying to solve an Australian problem that then they realize is actually a worldwide problem, but it's because we've got that speciality of remoteness and stuff across Australia that is actually quite useful in other countries. So we're seeing a lot of that services, because you're bringing that sort of cultural aspect and that sort of understanding, business and people in a slightly different way. We look at things quite differently. So that also is quite helpful. And then we've got other tech businesses and green economy. We've got seeing a few different Indigenous businesses that do some amazing things in the green economy sector, which is, helping mining, for example, do make the mining sector a bit more green. So it's quite interesting, and I'm super proud of the businesses that I see that they're Australian businesses that are Indigenous owned. You just go these are great. It's amazing.
So how do the Indigenous businesses you just mentioned there, how do they work with mining companies, and what do they offer these companies?
So there's one particular business that comes to mind that where they are retrofitting the mining trucks and making them green, and that's quite a big thing, and it's quite a wanted service or product overseas because, you know, they're trying to make, in some countries where mining is quite big, they want to make their mining industry greener. And so that particular company is quite useful and helpful. So we can see that. Just that expertise and the longevity of the mining industry in Australia, like, and the, you know, interaction and advice and stuff that Indigenous businesses have provided over the years, not always in a good way, but, you know, hasn't always been received in a good way, I should say, but it's really well regarded.
You mentioned earlier about some challenges to market access. What does that look like for some Indigenous businesses?
So anything that is classified as a novel food it can have different, in different countries, has different market access requirements, and that can be quite a long process. So, like, you know, something that, like, you know, we've been eating for years or been putting on our skin or something, so if it's ingested, it's probably more of a problem, or if it's going on your skin, in some countries, like, it's not on the list, and so then it falls under the, what these called a novel food, and then you've got to go through a process to get that approved and be on, like, an approved list. And so that can take a long time and become quite hard, and that's actually can be quite a barrier for a lot of Indigenous businesses and non-Indigenous businesses when they're exporting. And that's where our colleagues at Department of Agriculture, Forestries and Fisheries comes in to play, because that's their key remit.
What are some of the challenges that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples face when it comes to exporting?
I think a lot of it, in my experience, especially over the last 10 months since I've been in this role, is just not being aware of exporting and the services and the opportunities are available to them. And that's something that we've been working on quite a lot. Like, I remember meeting with a business in Brisbane in, I think it was like May or June, and they were thinking about exporting and had been on a trip, but then since then they've been working closely with Austrade and Trade Investment Queensland, and have now been overseas twice with us and been really supported and wrapped around. And so just having that thing, and I think it's because it's not something that we haven't had generations of people exporting before us, so it's not something you've grown up with or we see a lot of. So I think some of it's awareness of the support, and it's not always you think of going to the government for assistance, but when it comes to exporting, like, there's, you know, the state government and the federal government that are here to help you.
How would you like to see the future of exporting for Indigenous people from Australia to other countries around the world?
I'd love to see more of it, and I think we've got a lot more to offer, especially, as I said earlier, that when I speak to businesses, there's just such amazing businesses out there and entrepreneurs and people that have got an idea, and I just would love to see, you know, my job not needed because it's just everywhere and businesses are already exporting and being successful. Like, it's now's the time. We're seeing it already. I've seen businesses that have been exporting for 30 years, Indigenous businesses have been exporting for 30 years, and then some that have just starting on their journey. And I just want to see more of it. I want to see generations of Indigenous businesses exporting.
You mentioned earlier that you've done several trips with Indigenous business people from across Australia. What was one of your more recent trips? Are you able to tell us about that?
Yes, we took a cohort of, I think it was 12 Indigenous businesses to Japan, to Tokyo and Osaka, anchored to the World Expo in Osaka and Indigenous Peoples Week that was held in Osaka in August. So we took businesses there. They were in the ag and food and consumer space. So that was really great. It was awesome to see those businesses showcasing to the Japanese audience, and just the reception from Japanese audience and buyers, and the engagement and the continued engagement and interest in Indigenous businesses since then. It was really good to see, because some people had never been to Japan, myself included. And so just having that experience of being well received and people really interested in not just your product, but your story and your culture was just great.
And what do I do, for example, if I had a business and I had no idea about exporting to overseas countries? Where do I actually start?
Go to the Go Global Toolkit. So if you Google Go Global Toolkit, it should come up as one of the first couple of hits, and register there. Have a look around. There's a quiz, there's webinars, there's tools. There's so much information. Like if you know what you're exporting, you can look at your product in particular markets and get a bit of a sense of what's going on in that particular market. And absolutely register. We have webinars. We have one coming up. We've done a couple already for Indigenous businesses, and we'll continue to do them just to specifically look at different topics that are relevant to Indigenous businesses. But there's always webinars on just anything to do with exporting that Indigenous businesses can go to at any time and watch recordings of them. So the Go Global Toolkit, your place to start.
Thank you so much for your time today on NITV Radio. Melanie Harris, the head of Indigenous Engagement and Export, the Trade Division at the Australian Trade and Investment Commission, Austrade. Thank you so much.
Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio. Join the conversation on radio, online and mobile. You're with NITV Radio.
And that's all we have time for on today's program. To catch up on any of our stories, please head to our website. NITV Radio will be back on Friday with more stories from right across the country. I'm your host, Luana Grant, Mundungur. Thanks so much for joining me and have a great day.
Parts puede ayudarte a revisar tu luz check engine, luz ABS o luz de mantenimiento con O'Reilly Veriscan. El servicio es gratis y recibirás un informe con soluciones verificadas por técnicos maestros certificados ASE. Si necesitas ayuda, O'Reilly Auto Parts te puede recomendar un taller. Pregunta por O'Reilly Veriscan hoy mismo.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.